This is Redefining the Counterculture on Witten Radio. Make sure to check out our website at wittenradio.com.
Good morning, you're listening to another episode of Redefining the Counterculture right here on Witten Radio. Today we've got a special guest for you. We're joined by film score composer Stacy Weidlich. Stacy, how's it going?
Fine, how are you?
Hey, doing well. I'm so excited to have you on today's show.
Well, thanks. I'm excited to be here as well.
Awesome. So, Stacy, you've been really, really busy. You've had your work, you've had your hands in so many different areas of film, and your footprint is everywhere. We're actually coming out of the 2017 Nashville Film Festival, where you walked the red carpet, and I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about, for those of us that weren't in attendance, if you could tell us a little bit about, you know, what's been going on with you, what projects are you currently working on?
Well, I'm doing a number of different things. I moved to Nashville about 16 and a half years ago and kind of took a few unexpected paths, in addition to songwriting and things like that. I got very involved in the arts world in Nashville and was president of the board of Nashville Film Festival for 2 years. On their board for 8 years. I'm currently on the board of directors of the Nashville Opera, which is a great organization doing fantastic productions, and was involved with a chamber music group in town on their board of directors called Alias Chamber Ensemble, actually Grammy-nominated Alias Chamber Ensemble. And then last year took an unexpected turn. I went into local politics, and I live in an area, part of Nashville called Oak Hill, and I'm now the vice mayor of the city of Oak Hill. So that's pretty crazy.
Wow. Man, that is insane. You wear so many hats. How do you, my question for you is, how do you keep from burning out because you wear so many hats? There's so many things that you've been involved in. How do you, I guess, avoid burnout and just stay motivated?
Well, I think by keeping my hand in a lot of different things, it avoids some of the burnout because each area has something different going on in it, and it's almost like it stimulates a different part of the brain. You know, there's the intellectual side, there's the organizational side, and then there's the creative side when I'm actually writing. So but there are those moments when I kind of curl up in a fetal position on the couch with my dog and just wish everybody would go away. So there are those moments too.
I hear you. Now, your work, your work spans, for well over a decade. You've done so much. Some of your more notable films that you've done is like Pocahontas 2 and One Last Dance. Tell me how you first became, involved in film composing, and what was it that, really led you to the art?
Well, I started playing piano, was studying piano when I was a kid, when I was 8, and joined a band when I was 14, not a rock band. We were like a jazz lounge band, sax, piano, bass, and drums, and I was the keyboard player, and we started getting work when I was young, when I was 15 years old, when we started playing clubs, and then I got involved in synthesizers at an early age, and that drew me into kind of creating pieces of music on tape, and that led to me getting involved with a recording studio in Connecticut, where I started doing little bits of scoring work for them, and that expanded then into industrial shows, doing music for those, and then ultimately got a chance to submit a scene for a national TV show when I was 24. And I got that, and that prompted me to move to Los Angeles from New York, where I grew up. So it was, and then once in L.A., then it was, into film and TV and all of that. So it was a progression of experience and, always learning, both studying in classes but also on the job.
Absolutely. Do you, this has been quite some time now, but do you remember, your very first film that you were you know, approach to score? What were your thoughts? Were you nervous? Were you anxious?
Yeah, I mean, I've always worked from a position of fear. So it's you know, because you're dealing with tremendous deadlines when you're writing in television and film. So that's, you know, just that right there puts a knot in your stomach as soon as you start. But it was fun. My first film, full film that I scored was called Return to Horror High. And because I had done this student film that was kind of in a suspense, 50s horror genre, and so that led to me, you know, my first bookings were in that same genre. And Return to Horror High is most notably, well, it's my first film, and it was also George Clooney's first film. So, but he never mentions it with good reason, so it's very funny.
That's understandable. I wanted to ask you now, is there any, I guess, do you have any, like, rituals or anything, I guess, any things that you do to, I guess, to prepare for, you know, a new film that you're taking on, say, if you're approached to do some work on a film? Is there, I guess, anything that you do to get yourself in the mindset for the film? Because I imagine it's probably could be kind of arduous sometimes to put music to, you know, a film, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's a difficult process, but the it's not really a ritual, but it's the way to approach it is you watch the film or TV episode or whatever it is and watch it a couple of times to react to it emotionally, because ultimately, what you're trying to do with music is you're trying to guide the audience a little bit. And if you can, if I react to something emotionally, then I want to convey that same emotion to the audience with the music that I'm writing. So I try to be reactive first and then say, okay, what is this telling me as the direction I should go?
Absolutely, absolutely. What is the biggest takeaway that you want people to get from your work? You've done so much, not just with film, but, you know, also in the community, as you said, you stated earlier. Looking back, you know, 10, 15, 20 years from now, what would you say that you want, I guess, the younger generation to get from your work?
Well, you know, I have one song in there, which is, you know, a legacy song, which Patrick Swayze and I wrote for, well, we didn't write it for Dirty Dancing, but it ended up in the film, which was, you know, She's Like the Wind.
Yeah.
And the fact that that has stayed in the public consciousness all these years, and I think that's kind of a composer and songwriter's dream, is to have at least one thing that you know has stood the test of time. But, you know, so that's a takeaway that, you know, I see a lot of young writers that are, they're worrying about, okay, will this, you know, ever be on the radio? You know, the thing to think about is write songs that you think are going to be on the radio 10 years from now, not just a year from now. You know, so try to write something of that type of enduring quality. Although sometimes you never know if it's going to be on the radio or not, but you know it's interesting. I wrote something in a notebook that I keep a few years ago, where I was watching a movie called Bright Young Things. I wrote down in my book that people in the, you know, that the music business is filled with bright young things and old veterans. And the old veterans would love to be a bright young thing once more, but the bright young things don't realize how lucky they'd be to become an old veteran. So it's, you know, it takes a lot of perseverance to stay in the business for a long time. So I think that would be the takeaway, is just, you know, stick it out and persevere.
Absolutely, absolutely. I wanted to ask you, how can our listening audience keep abreast of like your current and upcoming projects and kind of follow along with your journey?
Well, I'm actually in the process of rebuilding a website. I had one that I wasn't too happy with. So if they just, you know, stay tuned and, you know, it's an easy search also to see what I'm up to, just putting my name into Google these days. But I should have a new website up probably by the end of the summer.
Oh, very nice, very nice. Out of the, I guess, out of all the films that you've worked on, you know, especially Dirty Dancing, is there one that you have that's particularly, I guess, you would call like your favorite or your favorite piece of work that you've done?
Yeah, there are two, actually. There's a documentary that I did for ABC Television. They had a series that they used to do called ABC's World of Discovery. And it was kind of like their version of National Geographic, always focusing on some, you know, nature issue. And I did one for them on the plight of the black rhinoceros. And it was beautifully shot, had great narration, and the producers of that, so I'd worked with them a few times before, and they really gave me a lot of latitude in what I could do melodically, and was with orchestra, and that, I'm particularly proud of that piece. I was actually also nominated for an Emmy for it. And then there was a TV movie that I did called A Child's Wish. It was for CBS. It was with John Ritter and Tess Harper and Anna Klumsky, and about a teenage girl who has cancer, and it gets into the whole Family Leave Act. And actually, Bill Clinton, who was president at the time, made a cameo appearance at the end of the film. But it was a really, really well-made TV movie. And I really enjoyed working on that one.
Oh, very nice, very nice. I know, I think we're coming up on the, I think it's the 30th anniversary of Dirty Dancing. And, you know, obviously there's been, you know, a resurgence with ABC picking it up for, I think it's going to be a television film. Looking back on that project and just, you know, the massive success of it, how does that make you feel, looking back at it all now?
Well, it's interesting because it being the 30th anniversary and with this ABC TV movie kind of musical reimagining of the film, it brings back a lot of memories. I mean, I still remember sitting on the couch, well, Patrick Swayze sitting on my couch in my apartment. We were friends. We lived around the block from each other. And with him with his guitar, and I was sitting at the piano and working on the song. I remember the day that it was, the final version was recorded, with Michael Lloyd producing it. And I remember Michael turning to me that morning at his studio and saying, "Do you know what we're doing today?" And I said, "Yeah, we're recording She's Like the Wind." And he said, "No. We are recording a massive hit song." And I laughed, and I said, "Will you call my mother and tell her? Because I don't think she thinks I can make a living at this business." But he predicted it, and I don't know how, because the word on the street as the release of the movie approached in 1987 was, this film is going to be a flop. It's going to be in the theaters for 1 week, and then it's going to go straight to video.
Wow.
So that was my mindset and everybody's mindset. And then when it exploded, and then the soundtrack exploded, and then, you know, my single, you know, going up to number three on Top 40 and number one adult contemporary, it was just all a massive surprise. So it was just so disorienting at the time, because it's like everybody knew that the ground was shifting under their feet. I mean, Patrick went to a record signing after She's Like the Wind was released in New York City. And the police said they hadn't seen a crowd like that since the Beatles were in New York.
Holy crap.
Yeah, so that's what it was like. It was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. So it was just one of those moments when you just realize everything changes from this point on. But, you know, still at the time you think, okay, I'm going to have a good 2 or 3 year run out of this with the song and the film and all this, but it's 30 years later and we're talking about it.
Absolutely.
And that's the biggest surprise of all, is that it is how, you know, how iconic the whole project became.
Absolutely. What would you say is, I guess, your fondest memory of working with, or just, you know, being around and having the opportunity to know Patrick Swayze? I mean, he had this reputation as being, you know, a genuinely nice man in the industry, as well as a good man. What would you say is, like, your fondest memory of him?
Well, because we were friends, we had a relationship of joking around with each other, so there was a lot of very funny moments also. And I was just recounting this story the other day of one time having to drive his DeLorean back from the valley back into our neighborhood. And I told him at 2 a.m, I said, I don't drive a stick. And he said, I'll teach you. So it was that was very funny. But, you know, there were just so many little moments. It also, before Dirty Dancing, his wife and another dancer named Nick Gunn did a theater piece in L.A. that I was involved in, that I wrote music for and cut together tapes, because it was kind of a multimedia thing. And that was such an incredible theater piece. It won a bunch of awards, and Gene Kelly came down to see it, and Liza Minnelli and all this. So that's also a very fond memory from that time, unrelated to Dirty Dancing.
Wow. You have so many great memories, and just, I mean, it seems like you've been through a lot, but also it seems like you're also very well accomplished. And so to me, it's like your life is like such an inspiration, because, you know, for, you know, the young composer out there or musician that, you know, desires to, you know, to do what you do someday. I mean, your story is very much so one of inspiration. I guess, what advice would you give to, you know, the young listener out there that, you know, is pursuing music or the arts or, you know, some form of that, and just, you know, they're getting discouraged, they're not having any, I guess, quote-unquote success. What advice would you give to them?
One thing is to never stop the learning process. You know, always find out, try to figure out where you have gaps and try to plug up those gaps. Like, when I first moved to L.A., I took some evening classes in the mechanics of film scoring so that I would feel prepared. The other thing is also learn how to collaborate. The film, and television music is an incredibly collaborative process, because you're working with a director or a producer or, you know, whomever that may be calling the shots also. So I remember I once said at a panel, if you feel that every note that you write is the greatest thing and is absolutely a pure representation of your soul, then do not go into film or television music, because at some point somebody who's paying you is going to say, I don't like that.
Wow.
And you can argue your case, but ultimately if they're paying you and you say, you know, well, I'm doing it my way, they're going to say, well, I'll get somebody else to do it my way. So you have to learn to be flexible, and you have to learn how to collaborate and listen and also to be intensely self-critical so that, you know, you really listen to other people's work and say, okay, why is that person getting work when I'm not?
I understand. Wow, that's some really good advice. Some really good advice. It's so eye-opening. I guess, you know, one really wouldn't think of those things, but, I mean, with you, you know, having been there and lived it, you know, like, you definitely are able to, you know, share with, you know, the next generation of composers and artists, and that's, wow, that's some really good advice.
Yeah, that's if you're going into the commercial side of it. If you're going into the purely artistic side of it, you know, it's something else, but that's also very difficult to make a living in. But even then, you're going to have moments where, say you've written an opera, and you go to the artistic, I know this from experience of working on the board of the opera, where the artistic director may look at the, you know, your new work and say, you know, this part is really falling flat for me. Can you, you know, think about rewriting this or restructuring this? And if you are the type of person that just say, no, I'm not going to do that, and not listen to somebody who's, you know, qualified, then you're going to have a hard time. You're going to have a hard time. You've got to be able to take the criticism.
Absolutely. Some good life advice as well. I mean, it's excuse me. Not everybody responds well to constructive criticism, but
right.
You know, oftentimes it's needed in order to grow. I mean, you can't really grow if, you know, somebody's just kissing your butt all the time.
Right, exactly.
Awesome. Well, Stacy, thank you so much for, you know, taking the time to do this interview. I really appreciate it. And I'm all out of questions, but I wanted to open the floor to you if there's anything you'd like to say to our listening audience.
No, I guess one thing is it's great to pursue your craft and pursue your dreams and hopes. It also is great if after a while you can find a way to get involved in the community, because first off, it opens up other doors to you that may be unexpected by just meeting other motivated, talented people. But it's also just important these days that we stay involved on a local level, even if it's just volunteering some time a couple of times a month. It's just something that I've gotten a great deal of satisfaction out of over the last 13 years or so. So that would be my parting bit of advice.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Stacy. I really appreciate it.
Sure.
Guys, that was our interview with film composer Stacy Weidlich. Make sure to hit the subscribe button if you're listening to us on SoundCloud. We're also available on your iOS device. If you've got an Apple product of any kind, you can listen to us by dialing the Stitcher Smart Radio app. It's available for free in the iTunes store. Download the app, search for our show name, Redefining the Counterculture. You hear this interview with Stacy. We're also available for Android users. If you have an Android phone of any type, you can go to the Google Play Store, search Google Play Music, search for our show name, Redefining the Counterculture. You'll hear this interview with Stacy. And lastly, if you've got a Roku player or a Roku smart television, you can download us by going to the Roku channel store. Search for our name. Once you download the app, you'll be able to listen to over 200-plus hours of original content, programming, and interviews, all free of charge.
This is Redefining the Counterculture on Witten Radio. Make sure to check out our website at wittenradio.com.